All right. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrows. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a special edition of the Business Lunch today. Today's broadcast of the Wintrust Business Lunch is live from Tree Time in Lake Barrington. It's the annual Tree Time Goodwill Artificial Christmas Tree Trade-In. So stop by and drop off your tree for Goodwill. It's a beautiful spot. A little bit later, we'll talk to Joe and Lori Kane about everything that's going on here. You know, we talk about Tree Time quite a bit. This is my first time here, and wow, I had no idea how overwhelming it is. It's just beautiful, and there's every kind of Christmas decoration you can imagine surrounded. I just want to go out and shop for people like my producer, Michael Heidemann, but I can't because we're working now. Andrea Haynes is on the phone line. She joins us. The editor of Blue Sky Innovation is with us most Fridays. Andrea, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve, and I want to pitch in on the gift for Michael.
Oh, yeah, I will put your name on the card. You don't even have to contribute. I also should say I'm just back, and I am grateful to everyone who filled in for me over the past 10 days or so. Took a group of WGN listeners to Ireland, and we got back late yesterday afternoon. A great group, a lot of fun, made a lot of new friends. So good news there. All right, let's get down to business here. Tell me about this company. I did not know about them, Geofedia. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And they are friends with the CIA, the Chicago Police Department, but not Twitter so much anymore.
Yeah, this has been really big news this week. This is a case of a Chicago startup really making national news. This company, our reporter described it as sweet deck for cops. It really takes social media feeds, and when you're allowing your location to be recorded, it's putting that all in one place so that the police can monitor activity at, you know, maybe it's an athletic event. It could be something like that, but it has also been used around protests, which created some controversy this week.
Okay, so if you're on, you know, I'm on Twitter all the time, and say I'm at the Cubs playoff game, people might be using a hashtag, and the police could follow that hashtag and see what's going on. But this doesn't do it by hashtag or by any sort of language. Rather, it does it by location, right? So they know where you are and what people are tweeting about in one particular area.
Exactly. So you could see a marketing use for that, like what the example they were originally giving was something like if there are a lot of people at a Cubs game and you own a restaurant near the Cubs game, you could offer those people a deal, right? That makes sense for marketers. But I think what they found was there was a lot of government interest, and you can see why the police might want to use it to monitor the size of a protest or to see if people at a protest were getting angrier or, you know, if things were escalating.
To find out what's next, right? They might be able to find out what's next. And
exactly.
So,
when you get into monitoring protests, you start to get into a lot of civil liberties issues. So that's what's kind of creating the controversy now.
Right. Okay. So they sold it, or they're marketing it to police departments, saying, "Hey, we can do this for you." Correct. And I know Aurora has used them. Has Chicago used them as well?
Exactly, yes. Chicago has used it as well as Aurora. Aurora said it's no longer using the service because they just didn't find that it paid off for them. But Chicago says it is using that and uses other, you know, publicly available things like that to keep an eye on what's going on.
Okay, so if I'm at the, let's again do the Cubs playoff game, and I'm tweeting out, "Hey, I'm at the Cubs playoff game," that's not necessarily something I'm trying to keep secret. I mean, if I'm on Twitter, Twitter is open to everybody. Where's the rub here?
Yeah, so I think it becomes, you know, it's a lot of these issues with technology where it's things that aren't really figured out yet, aren't really regulated yet. But I think you get into, you know, Twitter, Facebook has also stopped allowing them access to their data because they offer certain protections to their users. And I think sometimes we don't even know exactly what, you know, we may feel like we're managing our privacy settings or things like that, but we aren't always even maybe 100% aware of what's being watched. And it's also like we might not care if we're tweeting that we're someplace, but when you get into that adding up to a lot of people's information, providing, you know, more aggregated data to the government, you just start getting into a little more gray area.
I mean, I get it, and I know why the ACLU is after it and all, but it's also, I mean, it's a little funny to me because I, you know, recently bought a printer, so I clicked on a printer ad on Facebook, and now I'm overwhelmed with printer ads. So
yeah.
The idea that my activity on Facebook or Twitter isn't, you know, it's almost like there isn't a problem if we use this data for marketing, but there is if we use it for public safety.
Yeah, and I think it's not, you know, this isn't like a one-day story. I mean, I think this situation will evolve, and we're going to have to figure out how we give people their rights, how we give people as a mass their rights, and then how we give, you know, government marketers, whoever wants that data, a fair way to use it.
Right.
So, stay tuned. This is just a modern issue that we're going to have to figure out.
Oh, I think so. I think you're right. So Twitter and Facebook and Instagram have cut this company off. They've cut off Geofedia. So if that's the case, I mean, I would imagine that's the data they're depending on to survive. Are they at risk?
I would say they're definitely at risk. But again, we don't exactly know what's going on behind the scenes because they aren't talking. So they might have other things up their sleeve and other ways they can do business. But at least as for what they have been doing, for the moment, they've lost a significant source of that. Now, again, whether they work all that out somehow, whether there's disclosures and they figure out a way to go forward, that all remains to be seen. So I don't necessarily want to guess on that today, but it would seem like their current model is in jeopardy.
Right. Well, you know, and we've seen this, we've talked about it, where something new comes in, it's tested in a way that there had not been a test before, and then they have to sort it out. I mean, it certainly has happened with Uber in all different sorts of areas, and Uber now is facing a suit over the Americans with Disabilities Act, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. Uber has, you know, done some things, you know, I guess to try to make itself more accessible. But when you look at the numbers, the lawsuit says that Uber gave only 14 rides to users of motorized wheelchairs over a four-year period. So that's, you know, almost nothing. So
they've got the rides available, or they've got, they say, the mechanism available, but when it comes time for someone in a wheelchair or with some disability to call a disabled able vehicle, they're just not around.
Exactly, exactly. And that is another one of those issues that becomes, you know, is Uber getting away with things that other companies can't get away with, and how does that play out?
Well, we'll watch that. Hey, let's take an elevator ride with Marcus Lemonis. I love this story that he has partnered with UPS to do this little YouTube show. To me, this is perfect internet marketing, this marriage of them and the program they've created.
Yeah, it sounds fun. And here it is right here in Tribune Tower as if they were filming it. They basically, you know, there's this whole idea of an elevator pitch. You got to have your pitch down to 60 seconds and you get the opportunity. So they are literally taking Chicago entrepreneurs, putting them in an elevator with Marcus Lemonis, who's an investor and the host of The Profit, and making them make their pitch.
And so they've got, what, 60 seconds to make a pitch, and they get money if they, I mean, there's a competition, right?
It is. It's a competition. There's three entrepreneurs who pitch in each of these little webisodes, and the winner ultimately gets $10,000. And they also get some services from the UPS store, which is, you know, basically an advertising vehicle for them to target small business customers.
And people can find that at UPS's YouTube channel. Pretty cool idea. I like that.
Yep.
And Marcus has got some cash, right? He just had an IPO. Was that last week? Camping World?
He did. He, you know, he might be the busiest guy in Chicago, maybe next to you, because he, in addition to hosting these various TV shows and web shows, is CEO of a company called Camping World. Just had an IPO, raised $150 million on that.
Not too shabby. Andrea Haines, thanks for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you again next week.
Thank you, Steve. Great to have you back.
Thanks very much. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN, a very special business lunch. We're at the Tree Time in Lake Barrington today, and we'll talk to the owners about the Christmas decorations. We're surrounded by them. That's coming up in the second half hour. But right now, say hello to Tom Gimbel. He's the man behind the LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
All I want for Christmas is a Cubs World Series, Steve.
I know it is, and I think you're going to get it. But, you know, come up on my lap, sit down, and we'll put that in your stocking. We're well on our way, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It's pretty exciting. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. A little jet lag, but that's okay.
I was going to say, the European adventure, your Clark Griswold adventure was a good one?
It was great. We had a wonderful time. Great, great food in Ireland, which is something I think people aren't expecting, but we just had some outstanding meals and just a great group, great time. So,
that's fantastic.
Okay, so next week, right, is it Monday, is National Bosses Day?
Yep.
And so I would imagine that most of your employees would say that you're darn near perfect, boss, right?
I'm not that naive. I think the probably thing they probably like about me the best is that I admit that I'm a work in progress.
Well, you know, I think that's probably important, isn't it, that we all kind of figure that out. But a lot of us work for bosses who we think are a little less than the ultimate. We're lucky now at GN, we've got great leadership, but there have been times when we haven't had such great leadership. And so one of the things I want to talk about is, what do you do when you're an employee working for a lousy boss?
Well, I think the number one thing is that everybody's got to look in the mirror and answer the bell. And so as an employee, and I say this all the time to my team, is you know, hopefully you know as an employee that you're not perfect and you want to grow and get promoted. And just because your manager has a bigger title, whether you're the CEO or a director or a manager or VP, it doesn't mean that they're perfect. So if you don't want to be judged at a level of perfection, don't judge your manager at a level of perfection. I think that we have managers who are too hard on employees, and we have employees that are too hard on managers. So before we call our bosses and say they're not perfect, let's admit that nobody is, and then judge them on what they're actually good for and try to work around those things.
I think sometimes people work for a lousy boss, and then they use that as an excuse, and they end up being thwarted in their own development that time.
You know, my beliefs, I always draw back to the as you know, the childhood analogies. And when our kids or we did, we had a tough teacher, a tough coach or what have you, we say, you know, one day you're going to work for a bad boss and you're going to be able to get through it because of this experience, until you actually become the person who's working for the bad boss, and then you want to quit.
Well, right? So, right. One of the keys you say is to always under-promise and over-deliver. I'm not sure I understand that. What do you mean by that?
So, you know, the question is, how do you get a boss to communicate with you better? How do you get a better relationship with that person? And the first and the number one way is to find out what their expectations are, and then commit to what you can commit to. Don't say you can get it done in 2 days if you're not sure you can. Under-promise, give yourself a bigger window for completion of a project. Make sure that your boss agrees to that, and then do it sooner. Right? And you start to set the expectation level that you're someone they can depend on.
Rather than overpromise and never being able to deliver on what you've promised.
No boss wants to get an email or a text at 8 o'clock at night saying, I'm not going to be able to get this to you today.
Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network. All right, so what's your prediction for the series with the Dodgers? A sweep?
You know what? I'm not surprised if we get a sweep, but you got to figure they're going to lose one game. But it sure does seem like they know how to overcome adversity, and they also know how to get ahead. So it's pretty exciting. And you know what was the best thing was, Steve? Seeing Chapman excited and motivated. I hadn't seen that energy on the mound.
You know what? Let's do that next week, because you and I started by talking about different sports teams or sports figures and how it relates to business. Let's do a little Cubs in the business world next week.
You got it.
Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network. All right, we'll talk again soon.
Take care.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. The Wintrust Business Lunch live from Tree Time in Lake Barrington today. Stop by, drop off your artificial Christmas tree for Goodwill at the annual Tree Time Goodwill Tree Trade-In. Well, we got the bosses behind Tree Time sitting down with me now, Joe and Lori Kane. I was going to say welcome to the Business Lunch, but I guess I'm kind of your guest today. This is a wonderful spot.
Yeah, welcome to Tree Time.
Yeah, I've heard about Tree Time for years, and I know you've been a great partner with WGN. I've never been here myself. There's a big wow factor when you walk in, isn't there, Lori?
Well, thank you very much. That's what we're trying to be. We're trying to be that you walk in and all of a sudden you're in a magical Christmas winter wonderland.
Yeah, I mean, I expected to see decorated trees. I had, Joe, no idea that I was going to be overwhelmed with Christmas decorations.
Yeah, it's about as overwhelming as you can imagine without having seen it, right?
Okay, so I want to talk to you about the business of artificial trees, and we were talking a little bit about it off the air because I've got two kids in college now, and I'm the sort of dad who really it drove them crazy, because year after year I'm taking them to the Christmas tree lot or even to the Home Depot or wherever to buy the live tree. It was my tradition. You had to do it. Mm-hmm. And last year my daughter was gone. My son was home. I dragged him out there. He really hated it, you know, and it was sort of this forced tradition. And I realize now that where my wife and I are is we're kind of in the market. I mean, I think when you reach a certain point, maybe you start to think about artificial trees. Is that it? Is it a sort of life cycle thing?
It really is. We see that very commonly, that our average customer is someone who's gone through some kind of change. Either they've really worn out a Christmas tree, or they've gone through a life change of some kind. And your life change is a very common one that we see. Kids go off to school, Christmas changes, the feel for the work and the tradition of what you did with the kids is no longer there. In your life, you want things to be simpler then. You're not doing it just for the kids. And that artificial tree really makes it easier to do Christmas then, so that when they come home and you don't have their help,
right,
you've gotten it done and ready for them.
You know,
it's great.
You know what, and I was the guy holding out for the longest, but I started thinking about cleaning up at the end.
Yep.
And that's enough to push me over. But Lori, you were talking too about, you know, if I'm all about tradition and taking the kids out to cut down a tree or to pick out a tree, you kind of try to recreate that tradition here. Explain that for me.
Well, actually, we were just like you. So when our kids were young, we took them down to the tree cutting farms and kind of did the same thing. And it was always an event. We took our Christmas picture there. We had hot chocolate. So we really wanted to recreate that same feeling here at Tree Time. So we try to make coming to Tree Time a family destination and a family event. So we change up our looks every year. So you come in and you're that kind of that wow factor. We have coffee and cookies and during busy times, hot chocolate. So it's kind of trying to replicate that. Let's get the family together and go out and have a tradition of getting a tree.
And when it comes to customers, you have a customer who comes in and buys the tree from you, but then you want to hold on to those customers, right? And there's reason to come back.
Right. And so you don't even, like, we really make it, like, you don't even have to come buy anything. You just come. I mean, you
no,
just
it's
come
true.
For the
I
ideas.
Know,
like, we have great design. We have great staff. And you can just come and get some ideas. We're willing to tell you how to do things, to help you, to answer questions. So it's kind of meant to be, like, coming to Tree Time every year tradition.
Is it like buying a mattress? Do you need help in picking out the right tree?
Yeah, actually, you really do. People do walk into the space, and they think they're coming in, they'll spend 10 minutes finding a tree, and they become overwhelmed by it. And our resources here, our designers, can help you understand what tree will work for you,
right,
whether it's an LED tree or an incandescent tree or a big fat tree or a little skinny tree. How do you hang ornaments? You know, do you have lots of little things the kids have made over the years that you want to display? Or do you just put 30 really big, beautiful, hand-painted, you know, balls on there,
right,
ornament balls?
I guess it's a good point because we've all done that with a live tree. We've, you know, had this idea, we bring it home, it's way too big for the room.
Yep.
Right, that's usually the dad buys the tree, a 9-foot tree for an 8-foot ceiling.
That's right. And we actually have people that do that because we tell them, this tree, you know, you got to make sure it fits. Oh, it'll fit fine.
Right.
They bring it back an hour or two later. It didn't fit.
So we actually see that as kind of our number one customer teaching point. And so we actually built, we call it the Tree Resource Center.
Yeah.
And it's a big X of, it's four little walls. And we put in it a ceiling that's 8 feet. So you can, and then we put different size trees in there so you can feel, okay, this tree is 7.5 and it's 63 inches wide. How does that feel in a space?
Right, right.
To help people see, oh, the differences, so you can actually get the tree that works for you.
They don't do that for you at the Home Depot, Lori.
Just no, so you know, we work really hard to get you that special tree. We really want you to have a tree that works for you.
Is the technology or the product changing? I mean, I know a few years ago with the lights on the trees all the time, that was a big change.
But it was.
Are there new changes, or what's new in artificial trees?
Well, there are actually a lot of really neat new things going on from a lighting perspective, from an LED perspective, and from a tree design perspective. So I actually do the designs. These aren't trees you can get at Home Depot or somewhere like that. These are unique designs that we've put together based on people's input. So I spend a lot of time in our showroom talking to the people, like you've noted, finding out what they want in a tree, what will benefit them. And then I go off into the factories and design the trees to do that. And we've put all kinds of cool new lighting technologies, different layering, different branch styles, different shapes and sizes, trying to meet everybody's requirements.
If I wanted that disc from the 60s that would spin in front of the tree and change the colors, can I still buy that?
We actually searched high and low
and found
a vendor
really
that was doing a knockoff version of that last year. But quite honestly, it didn't meet our quality standards, and we don't carry it anymore.
I don't think it ever met anyone's quality standards.
It still doesn't, so we do try. But
we're talking to Joe and Lori Kane here about Tree Time. And so what is your season like? Because you start first, right? You're on the air first. because people are buying their trees ahead of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine then, what, by January 1st, you put your feet up for the rest of the year. Is that how it works?
If only.
That's what everyone thinks.
What is your schedule like?
We actually are beginning next year's planning now. We have sample trees coming in about 6 weeks that are based on design concepts already. And some of the samples came in with the trees that were delivered for production this year. In early December, we'll actually get very aggressive about it. Lori will start over in Europe. We have a showroom, a monster showroom in the Netherlands that Lori and our buyer Margie, our showroom manager, they go over and they pick out some of the basis of the new season there.
Yeah.
And so that starts in the first week of December. And we'll then be designing trees, designing looks, designing concepts from there, implementing it through the spring.
You know, it's funny.
Ripping this apart and putting it back together.
I was going to say, it's, you know, Christmas trees, natural Christmas trees, are a crop in a way, right?
Yep.
But it sounds as if you guys almost live the life of a farmer, too. I mean, it changes through the cycle, through the year.
It does.
It's definitely a business cycle, and we have to. And you just do it once a year, so you got to remember. Okay, what are we going to work on this year to get better? And so it's a whole big cycle.
Joe and Lori Kane from Tree Time, thanks very much for having us out here today. I appreciate it, and I can't wait to go look around some more.
Yeah, thank you for
coming
out.
Thank you so much for coming out. We appreciate it.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Great to be back. I led a group of WGN listeners to Ireland. We were gone for the past, I don't know, 8 or 9 days, but everyone was delivered safe and sound back at O'Hare Airport late yesterday afternoon. So thanks to all of you who came with me. I appreciate that. We'll be off to Iceland, I think, coming up in June. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. But right now, I want to say hello to Helen Cameron. She's the owner of Uncommon Ground, a restaurant in Edgewater, started in Wrigleyville, too, I believe. I met Helen at an Edgewater Business Roundtable earlier this year. Helen, I've been trying to get you on the program ever since, so I'm glad we finally worked it out. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'm very excited about participating.
You know, and we were just talking, I don't know if you heard, we're talking about Christmas trees, but really, this is harvest season, and I figured might as well talk to you about harvest season because you're one of Chicago's farmers.
Yes, I am. Proudly so.
tell me first about Uncommon Ground. I know you just celebrated your 25th anniversary. How have you seen the market change since you began? Because it seems to me like the rest of the food world is sort of catching up to what you were doing 25 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that there's been so much momentum in urban agriculture and local food production since we began 25 years ago. You know, initially when I was going to farmers markets, I realized I was buying food that was being shipped in from California and Florida and even further afar, and was kind of disappointed by that. And so, you know, started just taking my own trips to visit my parents in Michigan to pick up fresh local produce to use, you know, at Uncommon Ground when we were very, very tiny. We only had 25 seats at the time. But over the years, luckily, Green City Market opened, and that was huge for all restaurants in Chicago that cared about local seasonal food because, you know, their criteria was that anybody who was selling food there had to be local. And that really created great connections for us in the city.
And it's a trend. I was just, as I said, in Ireland, and the restaurants we were going to, they made a point of saying locally sourced food. It really is something that's kind of taken over the industry. When it comes to locally sourced food at Uncommon Ground, we're talking about the rooftop, right? Tell me about the garden.
Yes, yes, we are. So we have the certified organic rooftop farm in the country on the roof of the Vaughan location at 41 West of Vaughan. It's 0.015 acres. It is a postage stamp.
Helen, we're having a hard time catching you there. Can you hear me all right? I don't know if you're on a cell or something, but I can't hear you so well. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you really well. So our farm is 0.015 acres. It's tiny, but it is mighty. We currently, for this year, have already produced 1,200 pounds of food in that amount of space, so well over a pound per square foot. And we probably will approach closer to 2 pounds or more per square foot by the end of our season, which is roughly double what most conventional farms produce. So,
I know you're about the quality. I know you're about the quality of the food, but I would imagine that's economical for you as well to grow your own food, right? Does it save you money?
Absolutely. We definitely want to make this a cost-effective venture, and we definitely produce, you know, more in value of food than what we put into it, aside from a small measure of the labor dollars that go into making that happen. But, you know, my farmers don't just farm food. They do a lot of tours and educational talks. We're very keen on sharing this process with everybody that's interested, you know, especially kids of all ages. And, you know, we want to make sure that people understand why this is so important, why raising food without harmful chemicals is important to our health, but also to our local economy. And, you know, bringing fresh seasonal food to people, you know, who may have trouble getting those types of foods in their communities. So finding ways of creating more urban agriculture, more community gardening and farming.
So you're filling bellies and you're filling minds at the same time.
Absolutely, yes.
How do people find out more about your restaurant?
Well, we have information on our website at www.uncommonground.com. And we also offer tours, so people can just email me, helen@uncommonground.com, if they're interested. And, you know, we love to share this with as many people as we can.
They can stop by, learn about it, and have an organic beer as well, right? You guys have an organic brewery there.
Yes, we do. So our original location at Clark and Grace, which lately has been kind of a crazy area to be in with the Cubs,
sure,
and their success. But, yeah, we opened Green Star Brewing in 2014, and we only brew certified organic beer using pretty much all local products. All the grains come from Wisconsin. The hops come primarily from Michigan, but we actually grow some of our own hops for the brewery as well at our Devon location. And we're very proud of it because the beer is absolutely delicious. And we're in a spot right now where we can't brew it fast enough, so we're hoping to work on expansion on the brewery.
That's a good spot to be in.
Year.
Helen,
yeah.
Cameron, great to talk to you again. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.